And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
And welcome, everybody, to Hands-On Apologetics. You have entered into Virgin Most Powerful's Apologetics Dojo. And I am your sensei and host, Gary Matuta. It's great to be with you today. As always, you know, we got a packed program for you. And, I think a very fascinating one. You know, in the area of apologetics, we can learn arguments. We can learn logic. We can learn all sorts of things, history. But often it's good just to understand where another group or perspective is coming from. And on the show, we've gone through lots of people, especially converts who have come into the church from, we talked about Mormonism, we talked about Jehovah's Witnesses, Seventh-day Adventists, Church of Christ, and kind of looked at things from their perspective. And, of course, that helps a lot when you're dialoguing and explaining and sharing the faith. One group we really haven't looked at, and it's a very important group and a fascinating group at that, is Jews, Judaism. What is Judaism? How did Judaism come about? Is Judaism today the same Judaism as back in the New Testament and the Old Testament? Has there been changes? How do they fit in God's overall plan? Well, pleased to announce a good friend of mine and a person that I think is brilliant writer, speaker, Roy Shulman is coming on the show. And Roy's going to talk about Jews, you know, before, during, after the destruction of the temple. What happened? Who are they? What's the theology? How should we relate to them? So it's going to be a lot of fun. And I can't wait to have Roy on the show on the other side of the break. And, as always, we have our critical thinking skills. And today's Finding the Fallacy, by the way, is the Questionable Cause Fallacy. And also we meet an early church father who is St. Pacian of Barcelona. So not exactly a household name, but nevertheless fascinating and important in terms of writings and just knowing the early church. So great stuff in store for us today, and it's time for us to give our shout-outs. Those watching on social media, live stream on Facebook and YouTube, hello, everybody. Great to see some familiar names. Actually, a couple of new names in the forum today. Good to see you. And also, I want to welcome all of you listening on Catholic Radio, or the fine Catholic radio stations throughout the country, and actually, you know, even in Europe. We have listeners in Europe as well. Welcome aboard, and you are part of the program. So if you have any questions for Roy Shulman on the other side of the break, give us a call, toll-free, 888-526-2151. That is 888-526-2151. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. Or you can always send your emails. If you're like me, I personally don't like calling into talk shows, you know, asking questions. I'd much rather shoot an email. So our email address is questions@handsonapologetics.com. That goes directly into my mailbox, and I do answer all the email questions. We have some great ones, by the way, that are remaining in the dojo mailbox, and perhaps we'll do an episode we'll dedicate to some emails, because there's some fascinating ones out there, and it's always good to hear from you, hear what's going on in your life, and if you ever have any questions, you know, I'll do my best to answer them. Let's see. I should also mention this, that sometimes, especially when we have Roy on, if I know many of you, this is your lunchtime or it's coming up on your lunchtime, you're at work, you can't always catch the entire program. Well, guess what, folks? You don't have to, because you can always go to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, allonewordorg. That's our website. Just go to our programs. You can scroll down, pick Hands-On Apologetics or any other great programs produced by Virgin Most Powerful, and boom, you have it right there. You can listen to it anytime you want. You can pass it along to your friends. And please do, by the way, let people know about us, because we have some great information, great stuff going on in the chat rooms, things like that. So if you like us, you don't like us on video, subscribe, pass it on, tell your friends. We truly appreciate it here at Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And, well, without further ado, why don't we jump into our Finding the Fallacy segment? Well, like I said, the Finding the Fallacy is questionable cause fallacy. And for those Latinists out there, it is the non causa pro causa fallacy. It's been centuries since people have recognized these fallacies. So often there is a Latin title to it. And, not a cause for a cause, basically, is what it says. And what is it? Well, as you can probably guess, it's concluding that one thing caused another simply because they are regularly associated with one another. Okay? So it's not the after this, therefore, because of this, which kind of reasons that since something follows, the preceding thing must have been its cause. This one's just the general association. Okay, so let me give you a couple examples. I found these on the internet. One is every time I go to sleep, the sun goes down. So one could fallaciously argue because there is this kind of association between sleep and the sun falling down below the horizon, that my sleep must cause the sun to fall down. Of course, that would be the questionable cause fallacy. Or here's another one. Flowers bloom in the spring, and birds begin to chirp when the flowers bloom. Therefore, the flowers blooming must cause birds to chirp. Yeah. Sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Well, not really. It doesn't sound reasonable at all. It's a questionable cause fallacy. Namely, that just because spring and flowers blooming is associated with birds chirping, it doesn't mean that one causes the other thing to happen. So that's our Finding the Fallacy for today, the questionable cause fallacy. And that was kind of fun. I always enjoy the causal relation fallacies. So why don't we jump to our Meet the Early Church Father. And like I said, today's Early Church Father is St. Pacian of Barcelona, who died sometime around AD 379, 392, around there. His father was a Praetorian prefect, Dexter, to whom St. Jerome dedicated his book on illustrious men. He was already dead when Jerome added him to the catalog in 392, but still flourishing at the time of Theodosius, who was reigning around 379 AD. So we know, he was alive at least up till then. Jerome notes that Pacian bore the burden of the episcopacy at Barcelona in the Pyrenees and comments on his simple eloquence and personal integrity, saying also that his life is even more illustrious than his words. And it's kind of funny because Jurgens, we take our information on this segment from Jurgens' Faith of the Early Fathers. Jurgen actually kind of concurs with Jerome. He says, Pacian is not an especially original thinker, but his writings have no small importance as an early testimony in the area of baptismal theology and penitential practice. His style is truly delightful, and it is unfortunate that his writings are not more readily accessible and more widely read. And talk about his writings, we have three letters, three authentic letters from Pacian to an otherwise unknown Novationist named Sempronian, and two sermons, one on penance and one on baptism. So it's worth maybe talking a little bit more about these writings. First, the grouping of the three writings is a bit artificial, right? Because they weren't written as a group. They were written during certain parts in his life. And I'm sure there were plenty more other works that he wrote that simply just weren't passed on to posterity. So they're grouped together in a single work. And so it's convenient. You have all three of his letters. The letters all deal with the same subject matter, essentially the defense of Catholicism and its penitential doctrine against the opposition of the Novationism. And you might say, okay, well, what's Novationism? What was their gripe, and why did he have to write on these sacraments against the Novationist? Well, basically, Novatius refused to grant the forgiveness of sins committed after baptism. Now, that is rigorous to say the least. Can you imagine if there is no forgiveness of sins after baptism? So anyway, that is what the heretic held up. And, of course, Passion writes very eloquently about the penitential doctrine and that sins can be forgiven after baptism. Also, the three letters seem to be grouped in the correct chronological order. The first must date in view of its mention of Apollinarianism, another heresy. This is a Christological heresy. Around 375. So since he mentions Apollinarianism, we can guess that, okay, this letter was written roughly around that time. And in chapter 4 of the same letter, it's found a celebrated line. Now, if you aren't driving and you're at home, you might want to jot this line down. It's a very famous line, and it comes from our early church father today. And, you know, keep it in mind. I think it's really cool. And you might already be familiar with it. I wonder, I'm just looking in the chat room, see if anybody knows what Passion's famous quote is. I don't see anything. Of course, I didn't really pose it to the chat room. Do you know it, guys? Nope, doesn't seem like you do. Okay, what does Saint Passion said? He says, Christian is my name, Catholic is my surname. Love it. So next time, you know, remember that. Anyone ask, well, what religion do you belong to? Say, Christian is my name, Catholic is my surname. And you would be quoting today's Meet the Early Church Father, Saint Passion of Barcelona. And on the other side of the break, we're going to talk with Roy Shoman about Judaism. Should be a lot of fun, folks. Stay tuned.
This is Jesse Romero.
And I'm Terry Barber.
From the Terry and Jesse Show. And we invite you to listen to the Holy Hour of Power, High Energy Catholic Radio. We're two Catholics with a PhD in common sense. We're on Monday through Friday on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
What we're going to give you is masculine Catholic teachings on the faith. You know, we say we're too inspired to be tired, we're too protected to be dejected, and we're too renewed to be subdued. Why? Because we believe in Jesus Christ and His bride, the Church. And we will take each issue of the day and show you how the Catholic Church has the answer for our culture. What we really do is bring men back into the Catholic Church, which it's about time to do. We want men to be leaders in their Catholic faith so that they can bring their family to heaven.
Our program is not right versus left, it's right versus wrong. And our program is where Catholicism and culture intersect. It's High Energy Catholic Radio.
We're going to inspire you to fall deeper in love with Jesus Christ and His bride, the Church.
The Terry and Jesse Show on the Virgin Most Powerful app.
Psalm 119 says, "Your word is a lamp for my feet and a light to my path." According to St. John Paul II, being a Christian means saying yes to Jesus Christ. It consists in surrendering to the Word of God and relying on it, but also endeavoring to know better and better the profound meaning of this word. May God grant that we always rely on His Word, read it often, and put it into practice.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. And as I mentioned before the break, in Hands-On Apologetics, we try to look at things from different perspectives to understand, you know, our relationship to different groups. We've had a lot of different groups on Hands-On Apologetics. We looked at Mormonism, Jehovah's Witnesses. We looked at Church of Christ, Seventh-day Adventism, all sorts of different groups. There's one group, however, that we really didn't look at, and it's an incredibly important group because it is our older brothers in the faith. It is the Jews, you know, from which Christianity comes. And so, Judaism is a fascinating subject, and oftentimes Catholics don't really know much about Judaism in general. Their information usually comes from the New Testament. And the Jews were very different in pre-70 AD Judea than they were afterwards. There was some titanic changes. And so, Mr. Producer, is our guest ready?
I'm here. Can you hear
awesome.
Me?
Oh, very good, Roy. Oh, I wasn't sure if you were on. I was kind of just giving a long intro. Well, let me give you a short intro. Roy Shoman is our guest. He grew up in a conservative Jewish home. He was studied under most prominent rabbis in contemporary American Judaism. Secular education, by the way. He got a Bachelor of Science from MIT. And he graduated magna cum laude from Harvard Business School with an MBA. And he's written some fantastic books. And if you don't have them, folks, pick them up. I highly recommend them. Salvation is from the Jews and Honey from the Rock. 16 Jews Find Sweetness of Christ. His website is salvationisfromthejews.com. And also, Roy, you're on Radio Maria, right?
That's right. Saturdays, 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. The show is called, a very politically correct title, Jesus, the Promised Messiah of Judaism.
Yes, and it's a great title, too. And I really enjoy the show. I learn a lot. And thank you so much for coming on Hands-On Apologetics.
Sure. Yeah. I love the topic.
Yes. I mean, this is something I think a lot of Catholics, we know Jewish people. Maybe know some things about Judaism, but I think for most of us, our imagination is Jewish beliefs are pretty much identical to the New Testament. So maybe we should start chronologically and kind of show how this develops.
First of all, Jewish beliefs are the same as Jewish beliefs were at the time of the New Testament. Jewish practice isn't, because they don't have a temple for animal sacrifice. And so sacramental Judaism, so to speak, is not at all the same. The practice of Judaism is not at all the same, but the beliefs are the same. This is really important from a Catholic standpoint, actually, to recognize that the Judaism that Jews practice today is not the religion, the divinely revealed religion that God gave the Jews when he gave them the Old Testament and the laws of the Old Testament for them to practice. And of course, that separation, that divergence came because the temple was destroyed in 70 AD when the Jews had a unsuccessful, or you could say too successful, revolt against the Romans, who of course ruled Judea. And when they lost that revolt, the Jerusalem was totally destroyed and the temple was destroyed. And the Jews, for a short period of time thereafter, had some, sliver of hope of rebuilding the temple. But when they had a second revolt, which failed about 65 years later, about 132 AD, they gave up all hope of returning to Jerusalem and rebuilding the temple. And so then, when the rabbis, I'm telescoping the history. So if there's anyone who actually knows all of the ins and outs of the history, they'll notice I'm telescoping. But in between the first destruction of the temple and the second destruction of the temple, the Jews were no longer centered in Jerusalem after the destruction of the temple in 70 AD. They had a second home in a town that's usually called Jamnia. And there, the leading rabbis got together, and they basically said, what are we going to do with Judaism in the absence of a temple? Because in the absence of a temple, no animal sacrifice, no sacrificial priesthood, no mechanism for the remission of sins, because Old Testament Judaism required animal sacrifice for sins to be remitted, and the only place where animal sacrifices could take place was the temple. So what are we going to do now? You essentially had no Judaism without the temple. So the rabbis got together, and they were all Pharisee rabbis, by the way. So what emerged is known as Rabbinic Judaism, and it is a clearly an offspring of the Pharisees' stream of Judaism. And they basically determined that in the absence of animal sacrifice, they would have a system of almsgiving and prayer and fasting that would substitute for the animal sacrifice for the remission of sins. Obviously, they wouldn't have a temple anymore. They would have synagogues, which is what we have now. In other words, there hasn't been a Jewish temple since 70 AD. If you go down the street, you might come across Temple Emmanuel or Temple Sinai or whatever, but that's just nomenclature. They're actually synagogues. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so you have to make a sharp dividing line between Old Testament Judaism and Rabbinic Judaism, and that everything we have now is Rabbinic Judaism. I don't want to just, you know, talk like a runaway train, so maybe I should take a breath and let you interject something.
Well, but, you know what? I don't know if it's runaway, but it's a fascinating train of thought. It must have been so catastrophic for the destruction of the temple, because, you know, the law of Moses is tied to temple sacrifice. And so Judaism, you know, especially after the first revolt, which in 70 AD, the temple was destroyed, and then that second revolt in the 130s, Judaism had to radically redefine itself, didn't it? And like you said, the sacrifices had to be resolved. Then it was synagogues, not temples. And this was done under the Pharisees. Now, there were many different Jewish groups. There were Sadducees, there were Zealots, there were Essenes. What happened to them? How come they didn't influence Judaism?
Well, they're basically... The revolt in 70 AD was extremely catastrophic, and one hypothesis is that essentially the only Jews left, or the only Jewish leaders left after that revolt, were the Pharisees. The Sadducees were very tied to the temple. They were the group of Jews that were most associated with the high priesthood and so forth, and so. There's a little ambiguity about all of this history, because the records aren't that great, and the question is, you know, how reliable is this historian and how reliable is that historian? But basically, either they didn't survive in any great numbers, or the Sadducees kind of were uninvolved because they had nothing to do after the destruction of the temple.
Yeah.
The Essenes were a world unto themselves out in the desert. They actually... continued. They had a separate revolt in the area that didn't turn out too well. And the Zealots that there's reference to in the New Testament also, the Zealots were probably wiped out in the revolt. So there are also claims, again, this is very polemical, you know, this is worse than, you know, Democrats and Republicans, anti-Trumpers, when you read the history. Their claims that the Pharisees actually were unfair towards the Sadducees and took the opportunity to impose their Judaism on all of Judaism. But in any case, their Judaism was the only remaining Judaism. Now, why is this of interest to Catholics? One really, really, really important reason why this should be of interest to Catholics is because right now you have this bizarre situation in the Catholic world where a substantial percentage of professional Catholic, I don't know whether to call them theologians or bureaucrats or you know, paid associates of the bishops' conferences or whatever, are arguing that we shouldn't evangelize the Jews. And this, I mean, there was a de facto tendency towards this coming out of World War II, kind of understandably, simply out of a kind of maybe a little bit misguided compassion towards the Jewish community, figuring that, I hate to even have these words come out of my mouth, but they suffered so much in the Holocaust. Why subject them to more suffering by introducing them to their own Messiah, Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
But it did produce a kind of hands-off approach. Let's be as nice as possible, as gentle-spirited as possible, and as benevolent as possible. And this kind of took the wind out of the sails of the evangelization of the Jews. Yeah. But then it became even worse, because then in an attempt to create a kind of a theological underpinning for this aversion to evangelizing the Jews, the official apparatchiks of the Jewish Catholic dialogue on the Catholic side came up with what's known as the dual covenant theory, which is essentially, oh, now we realize we shouldn't evangelize the Jews because they don't need Jesus in Christianity, because they are still in their, quote, original saving covenant with God. And if they were in their original saving covenant with God, you know, it results in this dual covenant theology in which the Jews have their way, which actually predates our Christian way. God is faithful to his promises, so he's still honoring the salvific system he established for the Jews. So they have no need for Christianity in Christ. And basically, God gave us Christianity for us Gentiles, but the Jews have no need for it. Now, not only is this absurd on the face of it, simply because of the words and acts of Jesus, I like to say, if Jesus didn't think the Jews had to be evangelized, he would have died of old age in bed, because he was crucified for evangelizing the Jews,
right,
not for
right.
evangelizing the Greeks or the Romans or the Samaritans or anything. But leaving that aside, even if God was still faithful to his salvific promises laid out in the Old Testament, those promises were dependent on animal sacrifices, which the Jews have not been able to participate in for 2,000 years. So one could say that even if God was willing to honor the system of salvation, sacramental, sacrificial Judaism, if you will, laid out in the Old Testament, the Jews haven't been able to honor it for 2,000 years.
Yeah, very good. We're talking with Roy Shoman. More to come on the other side of the break. Stay tuned, everybody.
Welcome to our January 11th, 2020 Spiritual Warfare Conference. Every year without fail, this is our most popular, well-attended event. This year's Spiritual Warfare Conference will host Adam Bly, a Catholic demonologist, and an auxiliary member of the International Association of Exorcists, along with Dr. Luis Sandoval, a psychiatrist who's part of the Healing, Deliverance, and Exorcism team for the Diocese of Orange. These two gentlemen bring tons of experience and expertise in the area of spiritual warfare. This is going to be a high-information Catholic seminar. I'll be there as well, sharing some riveting stories on the diabolical and liberation found through Jesus Christ from my best-selling book, The Devil in the City of Angels. Mark your calendars, come and join us, and meet other radio hosts from Jesus 911. Contrary to popular belief, spiritual warfare is not demon-centered, it's Christ-centered. Come join us and learn how to armor up and fight the good fight of faith. Catholics, wake up. Don't hit the snooze button. Join us at St. Christopher Catholic Church, 629 South Glendora Avenue, Escovina, California, on January 11, 2020. See you then. Strength and honor in Jesus' name.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We are chatting with Roy Shulman about Judaism, how it's changed, and how should we relate to Judaism. And Roy, you know, right before the break, you were drilling down on a very important point that, you know, this idea that, well, the Jews might have an ongoing covenant that's still in effect. And therefore, there's kind of two covenants. There's the Christian covenant and a Jewish covenant, and God's still faithful to those promises. So we don't need to evangelize the Jews. But as you pointed out, you know, rabbinic Judaism is very different from like covenantal Judaism in the New Testament, Old Testament.
That's right, and it's not the. Yeah, I want to change terminology a little bit because covenantal, and I'll get into that, is a little bit ambiguous. I would say that the sacramental Judaism of the Old Testament, which was dependent on animal sacrifice, that by definition went away because the animal sacrifice went away. But it's a little bit dangerous to use the word covenant, and the reason is because... I'll jump to the other side of the track, so to speak. Just before the break, I was talking about the error of the dual covenant theory. Well, there is an opposite error that also has some traction in the church, which is usually referred to as supersessionism. That is, that the election of the Jews has been eradicated because of their failure to follow Christ. So they're no longer the chosen people. All of the promises that were associated with the Jewish people before the coming of the Christ have been transferred to the church. That's why it's also sometimes called replacement theology. However, that theology or that viewpoint is completely contradicted by sacred scripture itself, including New Testament sacred scripture. That is, of course, divine revelation that came after the Jews did their highness, in quote, or heinous deed of rejecting Christ and leading him to the cross. And we know that it appears in different places, but certainly in Romans 11, St. Paul says, and these are direct quotes, "I ask then, has God rejected his people? By no means. God has not rejected his people whom he foreknew. As regards the gospel, they are enemies of God for your sake, but as regards election, they are beloved for the sake of their forefathers, for the gifts and the call of God are irrevocable." That's written after the Jews rejected Christ. So it's clearly erroneous to say that the promise that God, that's why covenant is ambiguous, because covenant can be taken to mean promise. The promises that God gave to the Jewish people have not been eradicated. As St. Paul says, as regards election, they are beloved for the sake of their forefathers, for the gifts and the call of God are irrevocable. And of course, this line appears in prominence in Vatican II and Nostra Aetate. It was repeated numerous times by St. John Paul II and Pope Benedict and so forth. So what you have here is you have kind of two errors. You have a left-wing error, so to speak, of dual covenant theory, this which is embraced by the more modernist Catholic theologians, and you have a right-wing error, so to speak, that's embraced by some very traditionalist Catholic theologians, which is supersessionism. Now, the way to get at the truth is to make a sharp, you know, take a sharp axe and drive it through the middle of Judaism, so to speak, and separate out sacramental Judaism, which has been abrogated, has been replaced, and the election of the Jews, which has not been replaced. If you separate the election of the Jews from the sacramental system of the Old Testament, you see that they're in totally different situations today. The Old Testament sacrificial system wiped out. We also know that, by the way, from the letter to the Hebrews. The election of the Jews not wiped out. We know that by St. Paul's letter to the Romans.
Right. Yeah, very good. We have a call. Amelia from Chicago, welcome to Hands On Apologetics.
Hello to both. Fantastic show. I could hear Ray Showman forever and ever. But my question is, I have worked with Jews for about 20 years since I was a teenager in various congregations on the North Shore, suburbs of Chicago, some more right-wing, some more left-wing, all Reformed. And a couple things that I just, it's kind of makes you scratch your head is, for example, just a lot of them use the name Jesus Christ in vain, or they put up Christmas trees because they like how they look. And, I would never put up a menorah because I liked how it looked. And it just is fascinating to me that in today's world of Google, that a Jew would be ignorant of who Jesus Christ truly is. Now, with you mentioning the dual covenant, is that possibly what many of them think? It's just so many of them, at least here in that area, they're very wealthy. They're very strong community. They help each other a lot. And I just sometimes think some of these rabbis are so educated and intelligent. There's no way that they don't know. And maybe it's that they have a lot to lose should one of them ever say, oh, well, I'm converting to Christianity. I mean, that would be insane. So just your commentary on that. I
need a direct object to the verb know. What is it that you're saying they don't know? That they don't know the story of Jesus? Or I mean, that he appeared and had, you know, a great following? Or they don't know that he was the Son of God and the Jewish Messiah? Which are you wondering why they don't know?
The latter, correct. That he is the true Messiah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's no way for them to know that. Well, first of all, I don't want to be Catholic bashing on this show, but they'd have more of a chance of knowing that if there was a little more evangelization of the Jews, because as long as the Catholics aren't embarrassed to tell the Jews who Jesus is and that their religion is all about Jesus, it's kind of hard. You know, St. Paul also says, how will they know if they're not preached to? You know, so that's part of the problem. But the other part of the problem, thank you for asking the question. I love the question. There are two other parts of the problem. One is, it is not self-evident that Jesus was the Messiah. If the New Testament is true, then it is evident that Jesus was the Messiah. If the New Testament is a work of fiction put together by deluded or dishonest followers of this false Messiah, and if it is basically fiction from beginning to end, except around the core that there was this Jewish rabbi named Jesus who, you know, was very compassionate and very wise, then there's no evidentiary value to the New Testament. So on what basis should they believe that Jesus was the Messiah? There still is a basis on which they should believe Jesus is the Messiah, but it can't be the New Testament. It has to be the history of the spread of Christianity, the story of the evangelists the apostles virtually all being martyred in defense of the truth of their claims and so forth. But those things Jews are by and large ignorant of and don't let in. But it's unfair to the Jews to say, all they have to do is read the New Testament. How can they not believe it? Do you see what I mean?
Fascinating. Absolutely. So the key is more to show it in different way besides the New Testament.
Well, if you're going to evangelize Jews, you can't say, look at right here, St. Luke says this happened. If it's a virgin birth, how could he not be the Messiah if it was a virgin birth? Right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know? So I think the first of all, I mean, I love, and I think Gary knows this, but I've been talking about my next book being science-based apologetics. There are a lot of apologetics for the truth of Christianity, which are not dependent on the New Testament, including, you know, Marian miracles, including Eucharistic miracles. And if you want to go on the history, a good rebuttal is, okay, if the New Testament is in fact fiction, then why did the people who came up with this fiction and made it up out of whole cloth choose to be killed horribly painful ways rather than admit that it wasn't true? So already the martyrdom of the disciples of Jesus, of the apostles, is in itself evidence that they weren't making up a story. But you can't just start with the New Testament.
Yeah,
fantastic. That helps a lot. Yes,
sure.
No, that helps a lot. I will continue to pray my rosary when I'm at work there. Thank you very much.
Yes. And also, by the way, I know you didn't ask this, but I can't help, you know, making the exhortation a little bit. The key to evangelizing Jews isn't convincing them who Jesus is, although that would be very nice. Praying and offering sacrifices for them and loving them is, of course, very, very important. But also let them know what you have in your Catholic faith, because if they know what you have, they will be jealous and they will want it. So and you don't have to beat them over the head, and it's not like me versus you, but if you just let them know how much your relationship with the Blessed Virgin Mary means to you, how much spiritual consolation and joy you get from receiving the Eucharist, how wonderful it is that you know what God wants from you and that you will be rewarded for all the good you do when you die and what awaits you in heaven and so forth. Even if they don't believe you, and they probably won't believe you in the sense that they'll think you're deluded, they nonetheless will be somewhat envious of the peace and the joy and the relationship with God that you seem to get from your Catholic faith. And as Walt Whitman, not a moral paragon by any means, said, it'll put an itch in their ear which won't go away. So, and by the way, many of you know of St. Edith Stein, who was an Orthodox Jewish woman, became an atheist. She became a Carmelite nun and later a saint. And her conversion came about fundamentally by seeing the peace and the relationship with God that she saw in faithful Christians. And she knew there's a truth there, and that someday she will have to come into knowing that truth. So that's really the heart of evangelization.
All right. Well,
Gary,
so
I'm not
letting
you open your mouth.
No, hey, that's all gold. And this is Hands-On Apologetics, so it's great advice. In fact, we have more to come on the other side of the break. We're chatting with Roy Shoman about our relationship with the Jews. Stay tuned, everybody.
Ernesto from Long Beach.
You know, I just wanted to comment, you know, and I just wanted to thank you guys. And I kind of wanted to encourage people that are listening, maybe that are not donating, you know, because honestly, I got to be honest, I used to think you guys were a little
too over the top,
you know?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. You
That's
know,
right.
If God gave us a lot, you know, and I have the blessing of listening to all this, and I just want to call all the people, you know, I got 5 kids, you know, and I don't make a lot of money, and I'm still donating to you guys.
God bless you, brother. You're amazing.
We have to do this. We have to do the extra. And it's not even the extra. People see it like it's extra. Kneeling for communion, saying your rosary, saying the Divine Mercy Chaplet. It is not extra. It's what the church tells us to do.
Amen. You're a good man, brother.
30 years old, 29 years old, 5 kids, and I thank you guys. But everybody else, man, get on fire. Fight for the truth, man. I know what I'm telling you guys. There's
I
so
love
many
it.
Out there.
Hi, this is Eddie Chavez, host of Jesus 911. I want to take this opportunity to let you, our listeners, know about an event being held here at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina. We will be celebrating the Feast of St. Michael the Archangel on September 28, 2019, beginning at 9 o'clock with Mass in the morning and talks to follow. Ruben Nava and myself will be speaking, so come and hear us talk about St. Michael and Our Lady. Come join us, and we'll see you there.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Matsuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Roy Shoman about Judaism, how we relate to Jews, and evangelism, apologetics. And Roy, you know, I want to remind you, there's a working axiom here on the program that the less I speak, the better the program. So please,
okay,
this is a great program, so please keep it up. The caller was talking about, you know, educated rabbis, but in terms of rank and file, whether they grew up in religious Jewish household or non-religious, I think most Jews never even heard who Jesus is or any basic information about him. Was that a true assessment?
I don't think that's literally true, at least not nowadays and in the United States, because I mean, speaking from my own experience, you can't avoid knowing about Christmas. You can't avoid seeing Christmas creches or hearing Christmas carols or and so forth. And nowadays, I hate to say it, you can't even avoid blasphemy. I mean, maybe people only know about Christianity from the horribly blasphemous shows on HBO or something, but they can't literally not know about it. And there's also another rather pernicious trend, which is that this has really come about since World War II, but there are a lot of educated Jews who are trying to co-opt Jesus and say that Jesus was a great rabbi. He only taught what other rabbis taught, and his followers distorted his teachings, especially St. Paul. They put a lot of the blame on St. Paul. And so Jesus never planned to start a new religion. He never said he was the Messiah. He was just a very charismatic rabbi that his followers kind of took the ball and ran with and distorted things. So there are a lot of stories out there, but I think total ignorance is not really you know, one of the prevalent scenarios anymore.
Yeah. So would it be fair to, how would we address something like that? Where they might have be familiar with the name Jesus because blasphemy or something. And, you know, they might know a few things, that he was Jewish, that he was a rabbi. Is it wise to share information, or is it
I think it is. I think that you see this in the conversion of Jews, you see this in the conversion of Muslims, which is the first step is to introduce the person of Jesus to people so that they have a mental image, so that actually he can, you know, he can appear in a dream, or he can start to appear in their imaginations or in their thoughts or whatever. And they have to have, you know, they have to have at least a cardboard cutout of him, so to speak, for that to happen. But I want to go back to what I said to your caller from Chicago, because I really think that's the key. The key is to, you know, if you are a believing Catholic, if you, please God, are a believing Catholic in a state of grace, you have what everyone else in the world wants and wishes they had. You have a relationship to God. A Jew isn't going to admit that he or she doesn't have the kind of relationship to God that you have. But when you describe your relationship to God, they will know in their hearts that it bears little resemblance to their relationship to God. The peace you have, I mean, a unique truth of the Catholic Church, so to speak, is the salvific value of suffering, which even many Protestants don't have. If they can have a sense of your just understanding of the meaning of life between birth and death, and the way divine providence, that way everything's arranged, the way that yes, suffering is horrible, and yes, God you know, has incorporated it into his system of salvation so intrinsically that the one time that God became man, he became man mostly to suffer and die. You know, if they can just see the picture that you have, it will make them, it'll open them up. They're not going to admit it to you. You know, they're not going to sit there, you know, after dinner and say, oh boy, you're right. Now I want to become Catholic. But over time, it will ferment in them. And I want to go back, if I could, to Romans 11, because St. Paul says this. St. Paul says very explicitly that the eyes of the Jews were veiled to the truth of Christ so that the church could spread properly among the Gentiles. And after it had spread properly among the Gentiles, the Jews too would recognize Christ through their jealousy. I'll just read those verses from Romans 11. What then? Israel failed to obtain what it sought. The elect obtained it, but the rest were hardened. As it is written, God gave them a spirit of stupor, eyes that should not see and ears that should not hear, down to this very day. Let their eyes be darkened so that they cannot see. So I ask, have they stumbled so as to fall? By no means. But through their trespass, salvation has come to the Gentiles so as to make Israel jealous. You see, it's the Gentiles in the church, is what they have in their relationship with God, which is supposed to make Israel jealous and bring them to Christ. And St. Paul goes on, I don't have time to go through all of this. It's incredibly beautiful logic. St. Paul goes on to say I'll just read these few verses from the end. He's talking to Gentiles. Just as you were once disobedient to God, but have now received mercy because of their disobedience. In other words, the Gentiles were out of relationship to God. They've been brought into relationship to God through the disobedience of the Jews, through the failure of the Jews to recognize Christ. So they have now been disobedient. In other words, the Jews out of relationship to God, out of the church, so that, in order that, by the mercy shown to you, they also may receive mercy. Again, it's incumbent on the Gentiles in the church to bring the Jews into the church, whether through prayer or through evangelization. The Jews were responsible for bringing Christ to the rest of the world. Now the rest of the world is responsible for bringing Christ to the Jews.
Yes, and yeah, especially that word jealousy, too. I mean, that fits in perfectly with what you said. And I think from a perspective of cradle Catholic, it's very easy for us to project our own views of our relationship with God to other groups where, oh, sure, Jews have a very warm, relationship with God, and they understand redemptive suffering and things like that, when in case it's really not so much. It's very different.
Yeah, first of all, they don't understand redemptive suffering flat out. And if you read the Old Testament, you won't find a word in there about redemptive suffering, right? Look at the book of Job, which is the most explicit dealing with suffering. No, the Jews are perfectly innocent in not understanding redemptive suffering, because redemptive suffering didn't exist in the old relationship between God and man that predated Jesus.
Yeah, very okay. Good.
So, but the other thing, I get so excited, I forgot what the other thing you said was.
About jealousy and that Catholics kind of project on other groups thinking that, well, they believe essentially the same thing we do. When in fact there are some blind spots.
I mean, I'm not here to, bash either, but ask a Jew what happens after you die. Seriously. Yeah. You're not going to get much of an answer. In other words, even if Jews had the relationship with God, which a Catholic in a state of grace does, and I know that they don't, because I was very serious in my Judaism. I tried as hard as I could. I knew what my relationship with God was. It wasn't non-existent, but it's nothing like it is now. But even if they did, God did not tell them all the wonderful things that he has told through the church, including what awaits us after we die. So, I mean, what's it mean to have a relationship with God if you still don't know why you should be good, why you should be a follower of his, whether or not you're going to be rewarded for being good?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Isn't it generally understood that reward and punishment, it happens in this life, not so much.
It's explicit. The Shema, the central prayer of Judaism that Jews are supposed to recite three times a day, says very explicitly, it's a passage from Deuteronomy, and if you obey all my laws and don't go after foreign gods, I will give you rain in due season, and you'll have rich crops, and you'll have many children, and so forth and so on. That the reward for pleasing God is in this life, not in the afterlife.
Yeah, very good. Boy, I can't believe the hour has already passed. And I feel like we need another segment. We're just scratching the surface. Roy, where can people go to keep abreast of all the great stuff that you're doing?
Well, as you mentioned at the outset of the show, my website, salvationisfromthejews.com. That has links to everything. I have a YouTube channel. You can find it through my website. I have 60 or 70 talks up in video on YouTube and countless talks in audio. As you mentioned, I have that weekly hour-long radio show on Radio Maria. If you're not in their broadcast area, which most of the listeners probably aren't, you can listen to it live on radiomaria.us, or you can listen to podcasts on my podcast channel, which you can find by, just going to any whatever you call it, podcast app, and putting in my name, which is Roy Schoeman, S-C-H-O-E-M-A-N. And again, the main connection to all of these things is found on my website, salvationisfromthejews.com.
Yeah, very good. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, and thanks for all your apologetics. And I agree with you. We haven't even scratched the surface, so let's do this again sometime.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Roy Schoeman, everybody. And again, salvationsfromthejews.com. Like Roy said, he has lots of great information, podcasts, YouTube videos. All of it's gold, just really profound yet simple to understand. And also his books, Salvations from the Jews. I highly recommend that one. And also Honey from the Rock, 16 Jews. Find the sweetness of Christ. If you love conversion stories, or you know somebody that loves, conversion stories, that's an awesome book to have. So, so that concludes Hands on Apologetics. Coming up tomorrow, we have Master Apologist Ken Hensley come on. He's going to continue his series that he's doing on kind of debunking non-belief atheism by looking at things through the eyes of atheism. So he's going to scratch on, we talked about conscious. Now he's going to talk about free will. Can a non-believer coherently believe that free will exists? Okay, so it's going to be lots of interesting information with Ken Hensley. So, boy, I tell you, this is the fastest hour in Catholic Talk Radio. It just flies. Thank you so much for listening to the program. And coming up next, we have High Impact Catholic Talk with the Terry and Jesse Show. The show that started it all here at Virgin Most Powerful Radio. So it's time for me to shut down the Midwest Command Center here and turn off the dojo lights. I hope everybody has a great day. And God willing, we'll meet again and talk tomorrow. God bless everybody. I hope everybody has a great day. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.